Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket podcast coverage of the TBT 2020. It's win or go home, and $1 million US is on the line, and the winner takes all. My co-host, Andrew Canyon, and I will be watching and breaking down every game from the tournament from an NBL and Australian perspective. Follow me on Twitter for NBL and TBT updates. That's at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D. And follow Andrew too at Andrew Canyon. That's Canyon, C-A-N-I-O-N. Are you in the business of buying a book? Try Booktopia. They have nearly 1,000 entries under the search basketball, but they have more than just sports books. They have everything and are based out of Sydney, Australia. Use the link in the description to help the podcast if you'd be so kind. Also, in the spirit of helping the show, rate, review, and subscribe. Any combination of all three is much appreciated. But right now, let's jump into it. Jumping into this, let's start with some NBL news. Andrew, Ben Madjin's retired. It's the only real NBL news out there. I'm just going to quickly read what he wrote on Twitter, and we'll get your thoughts and response.
Sure.
Ben Madjin, the time has come to say goodbye to playing basketball. For over a decade, I've been living my dream of playing basketball and trying to make a positive impact on as many people as I could through the... ... And then he's given a link to Instagram. I won't read it any further. We get the idea there. Ben Madjin, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we probably missed his best years, I think, in the NBL. He had a good young start with the Kings, wasn't it? And then he went overseas, plied his trade over there. And I think from what I hear, that was really where he did his best work. Came back last year, probably underperformed a little bit from what people expected.
I think it was a matter of under expectation, over, what do they call it? Over promise, I'm going to deliver. I think he wasn't, him coming into a starting role was never going to be his best situation, and that played out.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a fond memory of Ben Madjin when he attacked the chair. I don't know if you remember he went for a chair on the baseline, got angry with it.
I do remember that.
And
that's online. You can YouTube that.
It's always a good one. Yeah, plenty of jokes about, you know, playing defense against a chair and all that sort of stuff. He got angry with it. Good hard-nosed player, I think.
Yeah, I liked him. He had a bad year last year, or substandard last year, but as I said, more expectation. And I think it's sad because, I mean, Southeast Melbourne may, I don't know where they're going to sit in the record at the end of next season, but they've already led the way in unexpected retirements. Ty Wesley a couple of days ago, now Madjin. Much as I didn't think those two's best years were ahead of him, I didn't think they were going to retire after this year. And I think Madjin could have been that sixth guy off the bench, hit a couple of shots, come back in that sort of 15 to 20 minute role. But looks like, I think COVID again has had a huge presence over these two, and they've decided not to do it anymore.
Yeah, I think so. I'm just looking here as well on his Instagram, and you're right. You're a smart move not to read the whole thing out. It's too long, but read it in your own time, listeners. But I do notice here he talks about his son having been diagnosed with autism.
Right.
Joe Ingles also has a son with autism. And I can reflect on that because I too have a son who has autism. So I can appreciate the impact it can have on a family and wish him all the best as he deals with that particular challenge.
Good on him. And he is, make no mistake, he is taking a step away from the game early. He would have got offers from NBL clubs with the imports down, even the rosters trimmed from 11 to 10, and the imports down. He still would have got a job. So this is a selfless act, and I tip my cap to him.
Yep. Thanks for the memories, Madge.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Let's jump onto the games because it was a great game. Let's go to the second game of today that was by far the better talking point of the two. Or not by far, but I think
The one that everybody's interested in.
Number 22, sideline cancer. Versus number two, overseas elite. Let's start in the first quarter. If I can just actually throw my overarching questions for this game at you. These are the questions I had answers to or wanted to seek answers to by watching. And I had Frank Session versus Marcus Keane. They both play in the Taiwanese League. Who was going to be the better of the two? The other major question I have was, how will sideline cancer guard Joe Johnson? That was a question I was really looking to answer. And then the third one was, not an exhaustive list, but will Marcus Keane get off or will it be someone else? What coverage will sideline cancer do on Keane? You know, because this overseas elite team has done a pretty good job to this point of not only isolating the best player, really diagnosing who that is, but also how to stop them. They did it to Machado. They did it last game against, I'm blanking. Ja'Cory Williams.
Yep.
So that's what I was looking for. Did you have questions, Andrew?
Well, my questions were similar to yours. I think it was going to be and I think we talked about this yesterday, is Keane going to be able to get off? So much of the play of Sideline Cancer relies on him either scoring directly or distributing, being a decoy. So that was the interesting one. I also had questions over Joe Johnson, given that he is 39. He had a monster game yesterday.
I was second game in 2 days.
Can he back up? You know, they talk a lot about him doing yoga and stretching and looking after his body. I have no doubt. And he looks like, you know, he looks like a beast. But can you go 2 days running? You know, it doesn't matter.
With big minutes and big load. Yeah, I agree.
And so that was my question coming into this one.
What's interesting is, who was it? I think it was the other not Sideline Cancer, but in the other game, the Golden Eagles team had Travis Dina, same age as Joe Johnson. Yeah. Those two players did not look, you would think one looked 39, one didn't, and it wasn't Joe Johnson that looked his age.
I could relate better to Dina. Yeah. I just want to point that out.
played the minutes that would be expected of a guy of that age. From the first quarter, this game in the first quarter just seemed to just, the first quarter just happened. I didn't get an answer to any of those questions.
Yep.
15 to 19. Did you have anything from that first quarter worth talking about?
A couple of things. I noted that Keane was very active. So he wasn't, he was taking the game on, certainly not passive, but I didn't think he was making all the right decisions. He took a really long 3-point shot at one point. It was just the wrong shot to take. And I think if you're going to pick a weakness on Keane, that's probably it, his decision-making. And I think he favors the shot over anything else. He's a scoring point guard. Sometimes I think he maybe needs to put it back in the holster and just play it out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. My only other question, didn't really get an answer, just a question to myself as I was watching it, is that were Overseas Elite too focused on Johnson? You know, were they just going to be so focused on what he could do?
Heliocentric basketball. Yeah, I agree. I think if I had to give an answer to that question, I'd probably say a little bit I'd lean toward yes rather than no.
But you're right. The first quarter, I like the way you put it. It just happened. Yes, it did.
15 to 19.
Correct.
Single coverage on Keane and Johnson. I didn't see any strategy on those two from the get-go. Like it wasn't like hard doubles on Johnson in the post, which we saw a little of later. Keane, there was, you know, a lot of pressure off the pick and roll and guys were stepping out, but nothing that looked like that Marcus Keane hadn't faced in the past or Joe Johnson hadn't faced in this tournament before.
It was almost two teams feeling each other out at this point.
Very much.
Mm-hmm. And we move into the second.
Second quarter, what'd you have?
Well, Poo Jetta, does that guy miss? He turns out he does miss because he did miss a couple later in the game. But geez, I think that's the first one I'd seen for the tournament. He is automatic, incredible. Mm-hmm.
He was the guy who gave Overseas Elite their biggest lead of the game, which was 11 points. He hit a three to take it there, 15 to 26. Really good start to this second quarter for them. And I saw it as the guy who really kind of came back, took that punch and came back was Remy Abel, I believe, the cousin of Bo Jackson. He had, 5 points? I think he had a 2 and 1 and another 2 and was the only guy scoring when Sideline Cancer really got punched in the face or punched in the lip.
I did note that Joe Johnson wasn't scoring like he was the day before. No. He was missing from shots.
Outside.
Yeah.
That's an overarching question I have for you. He went 1 of 6 in this game, most of which the misses from the outside came in this second quarter.
Yep.
Did you think they were good shots, bad shots? Did he just miss them? What do you think? He did have one quarter court shot that obviously, you know, is a throw. Yeah, is a prayer.
Discount that one.
So he's 1 of 5, let's say. It's a bad percentage for him.
Yeah, I didn't think any of the shots were outside what he could do. Yeah, they were inside ones. They were just rimming out, bobbling around. He just didn't have it flowing. I think that's the nature of the game. Sometimes you've got it rolling and sometimes you don't. But I did think that maybe Overseas Elite, they were really making a deal of giving it to him.
Yep.
And it did have me thinking, it's like, what would this team be without Joe Johnson? Now, because
Joe Johnson, just minus Joe Johnson and no DJ Kennedy put in his place?
Yeah, correct. If you took Joe Johnson out, they would have been eliminated couple of rounds ago, right?
Well, I'm not so sure about. That was my question I wanted to ask you. Is Poo Jetta didn't have a huge game in this one. I've got his stats, ending stats. We'll talk about him later on. But didn't play out of control. You know, didn't turn over a lot, but didn't shoot a lot either. I felt like, in answer to your question, what would this team be like without Joe Johnson? I think they'd play through him more, and I don't think that'd be necessarily a bad thing. I think he never makes a bad decision. He never misses when he gets a good look. I'm not so sure it would be a bad thing.
So Joe Johnson was creating too much gravity? Everything was sucking into him?
I think he certainly slowed this game down. I mean, you look at the target, right? Overseas Elite, you would think, would normally be in the 70s, in the 80s, yep. you know, type team. And the Elam target was...
67.
Now, high 70s is what you would consider an average game, and I feel like Overseas Elite are a better team than that, so they should be in the 80s. And that's 20 points less than they probably should have put up. And I felt like, yes, they played a style that accommodated Joe Johnson to get it in the paint, you know, make his catch, make a move. He didn't shoot with less than 10 seconds left on a 30-second shot clock. So, yeah, I kind of do.
And what Joe Johnson had to face in this game as well was he didn't have the Elmore boys defending him. He had Thompson, big body, big.
You know, that was a big – that was kind of that question about how they were going to guard Joe Johnson. The answer was, yeah, a fair bit of Eric Thompson in the paint.
Yep, and just made life difficult. You know, Joe Johnson would have been aware of his presence, whereas I don't think any time Ott bodied up against him, I don't think he was too concerned.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so. Eric Thompson, I thought he was fantastic in this game. For a guy who didn't get a lot of purposeful catches and feeds, he got a lot of his points off the backboard. And while I looked at it that Overseas Elite actually won the offensive rebounding battle, I think that was more a fact of they had many threes that missed and went long. Whereas Thompson, I'd say 3/4 of his points came off a rebound and a putback, which is so critical. You can win the rebounding count, the offensive rebounding count all you want, but if they're not those purposeful, you know, the ball is in dispute, you block out a guy, you get it and lay it up, they're a turnover and a score, a steal and a score in one. And Thompson, I felt when they were struggling, he was the guy because Keane was struggling to find this game. And Thompson kept them around. I mean, they were down 10 at halftime, 27-37.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but Thompson was the junkyard dog, was really just getting in there. You know, he really had the lunch pail, the hard hat. He was doing the work. But having said all that, you're right. They were still, we're sort of talking up sideline cancer here. They were still down 10 at the half, 37-27.
And he only had the 10 points, but as I said, maybe 6 or 8 of them came off rebounds. He had 6 rebounds, most of which offensive. What I was going to say, quick departure, Eric Thompson as an NBL import prospect. What do you think?
I think he would add value in this league.
I worry about
whether his shooting would be a problem, and who he'd match up him. Who he'd match up on. You know,
is he a 4-5? Is he a 5?
Yep, I think he's a five.
I don't think he's not. He can't step out with any real regularity. So,
and if we lose. Sorry, if we lose Bogut and Plumlee from the league, well, yeah, he's there up all by himself. Him and Nate Jawai are sort of the only big guys off the top of my head.
You've named another bench guy. You know, is he a guy who can give you 35 minutes playing crunch time? That would be my only question. But I still like him, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
For the NBL, with the way the NBL's looking like in NBL 21, iffy. Quarter number three, you happy to go on or you got my notes?
Happy to go on. I always do this. I always say happy to go on, and then I realize I have one more point.
No, that's it.
I just noticed that Overseas Elite really seemed to be moving the ball better than Sideline Cancer in that quarter. They were passing the ball. They were creating space for one another.
Yeah.
I think Sideline Cancer were struggling a little bit with Marcus Keane and his early shooting missing.
Just decision making. I've got something I've forgotten to mention. The commentators, they praised Bobby Brown of the Overseas Elite, who I'm going to talk about Bobby Brown a bit later on, but this particular play took a quarter court shot and they're like, oh, that's a smart play, the 2-for-1, but it didn't give them the 2-for-1 because it's a 30 second shot clock. So he took this shot. There was a bit of a dispute for rebounding for a couple of seconds. And then once Sideline Cancer took possession of the ball, they had a 30 second shot clock. Now, they did end up taking an early shot and giving the ball back, so they technically did get a 2-for-1, but it was by no means designed by Bobby Brown's shot. So that I found curious. Bobby Brown is a name we're going to come back to.
I hear Bobby Brown, he's not the Bobby Brown I think of either.
My prerogative. I was listening to it this afternoon. Yeah. Whitney Houston's former lover.
That's right.
Yeah. Q3, let's hear it.
All right. There was a particular highlight in this quarter three that I was so excited by. I actually took video footage and threw it up on Twitter straight away. I was so excited. I don't know if you had a chance to look at my Twitter.
I missed
Twitter
it. No, I'm sorry.
The referee, one of the referees had this interesting little almost dance move that he put on as he sort of retreated back down the court at one point. Did this sort of It was a river dance.
Yeah, he had this sort of high kick little thing. Yep, I did see that. I didn't take as much note of it. I thought, oh, he must be like have gum on his. It's like he was sort of kicking off something on his shoe or. Yeah. Yep, I do
it,
remember.
It was wonderful. I thought that's GIF worthy. We need somebody to create a GIF on that because whenever there's a questionable call, bang, throw out the hot shoe shuffle referee. Really enjoyed it.
My note from this, and I do remember that Nate said, but my note from this was the Taiwanese throwdown quarter.
Oh.
Keen, 11 points, 4 of 5 sessions. These two guys
not sessions. You'll notice
session.
He had the black tape over the second S on his.
Notice that. So you got keen observation. but Keen had 11 points, 4 of 5. Pardon the pun. Session, non plural. 10 points, 3 of 3, and hit a couple of free throws and things like that. They were going back and forth.
They were.
For sure.
They
were. A massive three by Keane. Big three by Keane, bringing scores to 39-41. I thought that he came off a pick and roll. The coverage was decent, but not great. Big guy didn't quite step out, and Keane just smashed it in his face and took contact on the way down. Could have been a 4-point play, but wasn't. But did you see anything else in this quarter?
Yeah, that was a great shot. But overall, I thought the shooting wasn't nearly as good as what we were seeing earlier in the tournament.
Nope.
I think the combination of pressure as you reach get closer to the $1 million, plus obviously the defensive intensity grows and you're playing against better players. So it's not surprising that the percentages go down. It's actually made me feel better because the early games in this tournament, it was just incredible, the shots that were going in. What planet have these players come from that just everybody can knock down threes
and be fearless in taking them out?
Yeah, it was incredible. This is now, you can sort of see the tension. So this is now represent, sort of closer to basketball as we generally know it, I think.
And it's interesting you say that, more like basketball as we know it, which I agree with. However, I think it was a combination. It was definitely a pressure. I mean, we're now getting to the money stage. You know, everyone's now got... It's like that three men in a comic book episode of The Simpsons. All these teams have got a hand on the prize.
Yep.
But I also felt like this was the first time we really saw coaching from both sides into the equation. I really felt like, and when I say coaching, I kind of mean overcoaching.
Yep.
We talk about it in the fourth quarter. You know what I'm referring to.
I do indeed.
But I felt like this was the first time when it was really like, we are implementing a coach's strategy. Our coach is telling us what to do. Before there was a freedom, and I felt the games played better to the style of player in this tournament. It played better when there was less restraint. And in a way, I kind of felt like Sideline Cancer were the team that played with more freedom. And I think it was a huge part of why they won. We'll talk about it later on when the incident comes up.
Yeah.
If I can, at the end of the third, 47-54. So I don't think Sideline Cancer ever held a lead other than, when they've hit their first three-pointer of the game to this point. So they're still down 7.
Yeah.
So it's a miracle that's coming.
Still not looking good. It's not looking good for them.
No, and they didn't look comfortable. Even when Keane got going, Keane's 11 points in that third quarter kind of came at the expense of Thompson and a few others. It wasn't a cohesive quarter. I think they only outscored Overseas Elite by a point or two in that quarter to kind of trim margins a bit. Oh, well, by 2 points. Mm. Pardon me, 3 points. Anything else from the third?
I noticed that Diamond Stone reported that he was actually sent home. So they gave up.
They said, sent home. Yeah.
Don't risk it. Don't risk your professional career. So I assume he still gets his portion of the cash if they go all the way.
Oh, that is an interesting question. I will get in touch with Sideline Cancer and I'll ask them. That's a really, really interesting question to ask.
If I was Diamond and
You've
I was told... If my money's on the line, I'm staying. If I walk out of the hotel, it means I'll give up my cash. No, thanks. I'll hang around.
Yeah.
So I assume that's locked away. Yeah.
I'll ask a question. Better without him? Question mark.
Oh. Mm. I mean,
the chemistry is good.
You do not know, right? Because you don't know what you're missing. No, I think Diamond Stone's. He was epic in that first game. I was all in on Diamond Stone after that first performance. So, I think they missed. I think they've covered well for him, and I think Eric Thompson has really gone to another level than we would have otherwise seen.
With Diamond Stone coming back, the question with me was, is he going to leech Thompson's minutes? And I don't think he would have, so for that reason I think they would have played just as well, if not better, with him.
Yeah. One other thing, obviously knowing how this game played out, Overseas Elite, they missed a number of opportunities right at the buzzer of this quarter.
How
handy would another 2 points have had it been? Yeah, they just missed.
They missed a bunch. They have sort of three or four offensive rebounds in the quarter.
Yep.
Still up seven, but let's go to the fourth. Now, I'm going to highlight something and then throw it over to you. But I do hate to highlight one player as the cause of a loss. But I think I really sat with this for a time. And I thought, what is this? And I think I'm willing to push it on one player. And that's Bobby Brown for Overseas Elite. And here's why. His end game stats.
Yep.
5 points in total. Two of 14. 1 of 11 from the three-point arc. And it's not like these were all good shots that you take and miss. That I can live with. Some of these were quarter-court shots. Some of these were just early in the shot clock. Some of these were really uncalled for and unwarranted. 19 minutes. So he was second in field goal attempts for the Overseas Elite. Sixth in minutes. In the fourth quarter, he went 0-4. Am I being too mean towards Bobby Brown of the Overseas Elite?
It's interesting. I hadn't realized that he had shot that badly in just watching the flow of the game without stats in front of me. I hadn't 14, noticed.
11 shots from the outside to get one back. You can't do that.
That's a
when you're on a court with Joe Johnson,
yep.
and Poo Jetta right there, and you're looking at those two guys to take those shots. And again, I really did watch him because I saw his stat line. I was like, whoa, I got to see. Maybe these are all quarter court threes down the quarter and just garbage, but they weren't. Some of them were quite good looks. Some of them were just bad shots.
Jeez.
And when I saw that, I thought, no, I'm a pretty big stats guy, but
yep.
But they're not everything. I can admit that, but gee, 2 of 14. Wowee.
That's terrible. And when you look down the other end of the court, Sideline Cancer started to make some big threes in return. So if he was absolutely missing open ones and making bad decisions, then you're getting punished with shot 20 down the
points to 11 in this quarter, 50% yep. shooting for Sideline Cancer, 29 for Overseas Elite. So it wasn't just Bobby Brown. It was a bit of everyone. How'd you see it, Andrew?
Look, I only had a couple of notes in this quarter. I think I became sort of so engaged in the game that I forgot to write things down. I was amazed by that quick release that Creek. Whenever I hear he's M Creek, and I always think Mitch Creek. He's not that Creek.
Mo
Creek, but that one-handed release from the corner for a three to tie it up. That was
an
epic shot. Amazing.
He had a great fourth quarter. What do you have, 9 points in the quarter?
And then,
which is a lot in a nine-minute game.
That is a lot. And then Thompson, again, just showing his muscle inside to tie it up. 59. Pressure was on. Big. You want a big guy underneath just cleaning up. He was great.
5 points in the quarter. He was maybe a bit more actually. I haven't got him written down, but yeah, he was big in the quarter.
And he was just there. He was. Yep. You're aware of him on the court at all times. And I'm sure Joe Johnson was as well. I think he.
Joe Johnson, two of six for the quarter. 5 points. What did you think about the Sideline Cancer strategy on him? You heard a bit of it in the timeout where Charlie Parker, the coach of Sideline Cancer, was saying, when Johnson catches it in the post, I'm going to call out the guy who goes to the double. Did you hear him say that?
Yeah.
Interesting strategy. Like at first I thought, oh, gee, that's a little bit too...
Overcoaching?
Well, not overcoaching, but more like, gee, it's very circumstantial and more margin for error. If you just go like, yeah, we're coming off Bobby Brown because he's 1 of 11. Mate, that's easy. Then your players just know, yeah, once he catches it and takes a dribble, I'm going. But when it's like, wait, hear it. Oh, shit, did he say me? And it's going. I thought it was a little bit troublesome, a little bit, whatever. But it seemed to work out okay. Johnson had a couple of times where he turned in the paint and couldn't score where he usually liked to. What do you think about Johnson the fourth?
Look, I don't know what I thought, really. He just didn't dominate the way he did the day before and just didn't seem to take
the strategy
spots. I think it was probably the strategy more so. I think they just played him well. Obviously, his shooting wasn't as good. Yeah, it's hard to
say. I think a bit of both. Hard to say. I'm not going
to
give people the fatigue. I'm going to give it to Sideline Cancer.
Yeah.
Poo Jetta, I wanted to ask you. 0 of 1 in this quarter, took one field goal attempt. What do you think? Lack of aggression, strategy?
Probably couldn't get the ball after away from
Bobby.
Bobby, yeah. Look,
the bumblebee.
It's a real disappointment, isn't it? He would have knocked a couple of shots down if he'd had the opportunity.
I agree.
Just didn't get frozen out.
I think with him as well, his stat line looks really bad. If you look at the box score, it's under 10 points, very few attempts, no turnovers, not even many assists.
Yep.
His stat box does not, I felt he played well. I thought that he was such a great, you know, never made a mistake, very turned it over very seldom, and got guys' looks. Like there were times when, and just sort of, you know, the hockey assist, the pass to the pass that makes the play. I still thought he was good. Don't look at his box score and think that's a measure of his game. I thought in the fourth quarter he wasn't, I do straddle between, was he, did he lack aggression? He was a little bit passive. I mean, there was a times where he was passing it to Bobby Brown. I thought, just don't, you got to shade him out. You got to look him off. Sorry. Yeah. You got to, he closed the gap. Sorry, go the other way.
Yep.
He had to be a little bit more aggressive, but all of his decisions, I couldn't fault them. So
almost too team centric, perhaps. He was just
too team
not
centric,
wanting to be the guy that,
the clock so well, and, you know, 9 minute quarters, like not understanding that with an extra or a minute or 3 minutes less, depending on what league you play, just demanded a bit different of him. I don't think he quite saw that at the occasion. I don't know, hard to say, but
yeah. I've got a question for you as we head into the Elam ending.
Please.
So it was tied away 59-59 and the clock ticked over to 4 minutes. So it was all tied up. Would you take the time out there?
Who had the ball?
Sideline. I think they each almost had a turn with it, but I think it was Sideline Cancer that had the ball and called the timeout. And
they had the ball. I think I was always...
Wouldn't you try for a score?
I would. I would take the shot at... I'd take the shot at the free attempt before the Elam. So if I had the ball, scores are tied and it just ticks down for 9, I would take the free shot to try and build a lead and then initiate the Elam.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that was my thinking too. So they burnt a timeout.
Who did Overseas Elite?
No Sideline Cancer, if my memory serves. I'm sure it was them with the ball and they called timeout when it was tied away. I would have thought free hit.
Was Sideline Cancer. Yeah, I wouldn't have done that strategy, in answer to your question. No. I think it's found money and go for it and then put the onus on them to then, because if you miss it, you've then put them in the same situation where do they... Yep. What do they do?
And you can always elect to foul them at that point and stop the clock that way.
Good point. But you don't have the possession.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see strengths for both strategy, but no, I wouldn't have done it. No.
Yeah. I was surprised by it.
I just wanted to talk about, so we go into the Elam. Scores tied at 59, target 67. Again, low scoring. And I felt it was overcoached. I just felt, and here's why I say that. And we're going to talk about the big moment in a second, but Sideline Cancer. When I talked about them playing with that little bit extra freedom, they had 4 players who played 32 minutes plus. Overseas Elite had 0 players play over 30 minutes. Now, typically, you know, these games typically should go for 36 minutes if the 9 minutes plays out through the Elam, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But Overseas Elite had none. And I feel like 30 is, you should play about 3/4 of a game. So, you know, slightly less. Overseas Elite put 10 guys through the game. Sideline Cancer only put 8 guys through the game. And 2 of those guys got 3 minutes. Now, they probably were a little bit lean, but depth. I feel like depth is the silent killer in both the TBT and the NBL. What do you think?
That's a really good insight. You're right that they Overseas Elite. And the thing is, it's not like they've got a couple of spuds at the end of the bench that you can say, oh, look, I can't really play you because you're just not quite at the same level. They're all quality players. They all have a right to play.
And the share is the same from what I've seen. They all get that sort of 110K. So it's hard to, unless you're telling them, well, you're only getting 50K of the cut, so you can't have as much time. So it's, you kind of have to justify it to the players who are getting, Joe Johnson, who's getting an equal cut as a guy who's getting 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's an ego thing that comes into the TVT. It's very interesting. But you were saying.
And each player thinking, give me a chance, coach, and I'll make the difference. You know, and they've got runs on the board. I'm sure they've all got histories where they can point to the fact, hey, I won this game or I did this in the NBA. I can do it in the TBT.
Or college, yeah.
So they're a really interesting, your ego management, real problem. And how do you get in the flow in this game if you're not getting those extended minutes?
It's tournament play too. And this is the difference as well, specific to the TBT over NBL. Okay, NBL guys, let's say they don't play 30 minutes, but you've seen teams before. You typically play a team either 3 or 4 times through the course of the season. Where it's TBT, you got to be in the game because this is the first time Overseas Elite did play Sideline Cancer and will play Sideline Cancer this year. That's it. So it's not like you can scout them and say, well, even if you look at old games and you say, well, that's Sideline Cancer versus the teams they've played, That's not them. You don't get that intimate. Yeah, exactly. So if your players aren't in the game for a good three quarters plus of the time, I don't feel like they get a chance to actually understand the situation they're in. And I think that really, really hurt them. And it has hurt other teams in this tournament.
Yep. Yep. Mm.
That's ridiculous.
You're going to get feedback.
Who am I going to get feedback from?
You're going to get feedback from Will Weaver on this one. He is going to disagree strongly on your take on this one.
Let's go, Elam. Tell me what notes you take.
Well, I just want to point out as we're heading into the Elam. So the Overseas Elite scored 5 points in the fourth quarter leading up to the Elam, and Sideline Cancer scored 12. So they definitely had the flow going. Mm-hmm. But then coming into the Elam, Overseas Elite, they missed some real dagger opportunities. I think there was a sequence where they had a number of offensive rebounds and just couldn't put it in. Mm-hmm. And then went up the other end and Keane hit a ridiculous 3-point shot. It was like, wow.
Was that the one in the corner?
Yeah. Was it the corner? No, I think it was the long. It was long sort of just off square in front.
Yeah, I do remember that one.
Just a deep three. And I thought, wow, that's a real, real big hit after you've been able to defend down the other end and then to whack that. But then they weren't to be outdone Overseas Elite because our man Joe Johnson stepped up, hit a two and one. Yeah.
I remember him.
He took it down low and scored it.
But it got scrappy to start the Elam, didn't it? There was hustle plays all over. And for the most part, I think Overseas Elite got out-hustled is what I've got written here.
Yeah, yep. Seeing Sideline Cancer, I think this is what happens when an underdog gets a sniff. They really start to believe in themselves. And that actually came up, I don't know if you noticed, one of the timeouts right towards the end, the coach of Sideline Cancer, I think it was the coach, was screaming out at the end of the timeout, I believe.
I've got it written down here, I believe. Yeah, I do remember that. It did.
Emotional.
And that's one thing, a note I had as well, like, when in the NBL do you come out of a timeout and the coach is screaming stuff like, I believe, that sort of real Hollywood. I thought it was brilliant. You know, that sort of stuff, you know, NBL timeouts are very traditional, very strategic. You know, sometimes a timeout more important than saying an adjustment is just saying something, you know, it's like David Bowie says, like do something outrageous on occasion, you know, it's never so bad. So
when you've been a player, I'm sure there's been times in timeouts when a coach has laid out a highly detailed strategic plan and you walk back out on the court and you're like, I have no effing idea what was just laid out for me. I'm just going to follow what everybody else does.
Just feel the game. And do we want to talk about it? Or is there something else? Oh, there's Master 3. Yeah, I think we've come to the timeout, haven't we? Is there anything else?
Yeah, let's...
Your thoughts.
Far away, Joe, because I think I feel like you've got some thoughts on this one.
If I can first of all tell people my heads, like, I'm not a big coach guy. I've never understood why coaches should go players, you know, who get the credit, and then coaches well below that. I've never understood where, you know, teams were like, wow, Greg Popovich, he just put his hands up. No, he didn't. He has Tim Duncan. Okay, I hate it. I always hated that sort of stuff. So just to give you some. We got a question on Twitter from Matthew Holombe. Hope I'm pronouncing it, whatever the pronunciation is. Thank you for the question, Matthew. He asked about this timeout from Overseas Elite. And Matthew's a good follow. I don't know his exact Twitter handle, but he's a good follow. We disagree on things on occasion, but he's always respectful.
That's what you want. There's no need to get mean. Just because it's on the internet doesn't mean you have to be mean.
Precisely. And Matthew's a good one for it. But anyway, back to this timeout. Oh, my word. So to describe it, ball comes up. There was a player in the post. I forget who it was for Overseas Elite, but made the catch, made the layup. But in between making the catch and the layup, Mark Hughes of the Overseas Elite took a timeout as the ball was going through the hoop. And that would have won him. That would have won it.
It was a win. Yeah, it was off a broken play. That's the thing down the other end. You had Overseas
Elite. I couldn't believe it.
Bobbling the ball.
Matthew's question to me was, did that cost them the game? And the answer is, yeah, of course it did. Absolutely. Yep. And what I hated about it the most was the ego of it. What are you, and Mark Hughes, I don't know him personally, I don't know what his coaching credentials are, but what are you going to say to Joe Johnson and Pujeda in particular, who are both 39 and 36 years old respectively, played in Europe and the NBA for multiple teams, been a part of All-Stars, $100 million contracts, all that, played more basketball than sand grains on the Sahara. What is left to tell them in a tournament for 110K individually that they don't already know? Like, do you have to tell those two guys, hey, I know you're, you know, you keep your composure here. They're absolute veterans. They barely even sweat. They're so cool. So I couldn't, I just thought, the word I have written here is ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was to draw up?
Well,
and then they went to a play, which was Joe Johnson in the post. It was what they'd done all game.
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. What did you think?
Look, you're right about ego. I also just thought incompetence.
And fear.
As a coach, or my, I'm not a coach, okay? So I could be wrong on this.
Neither.
My understanding of the way the game is played or should be played is that when there is a scrap on the court, unless, now I know there's the scrap, the NBA, you know, sort of variant mm-hmm. where you call a timeout as soon as there's potential to be a jump ball. I didn't see any potential for a jump ball here. It was just a scrap. Mm-hmm. And then Overseas Elite got the ball. At that point, if you've got a timeout registered, you cancel it because you let the play unfold. You trust your guys on the court who, like you say, have been playing for years and will figure it out.
It'd be different if they had a young team. It'd be different if it was Sideline Cancer with a Marcus Keane who's a bit younger and a bit, you know, decision-making yep. different. You got studs, absolute composure pros. Yeah.
And it was one kick ahead. And then a pass over the...
But you could see the play happening.
Yeah, it was...
I mean, we had the press box angle, which made sense, but geez, even without it, I was like, you could see that play happening yep. from half court.
And you can call the time at any time. So let the play unfold. If it then bogs down and you're like, oh, I don't like the look of this, bang, timeout. But exactly. while it's still free-flowing, the defense of Sideline Cancer wasn't set. Run it out. Mm. See what these guys can do.
I agree.
And look, they did it. They did it. They hit the winning basket. It just made no sense.
Oh, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I didn't know it was going to be that bad because I got a bit of Matthew's tweet before I had seen the game, but I didn't read it all. So I kind of still preserved a bit of the result.
Yeah.
And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, wow. Because I thought, oh, maybe this question's a bit out of line. You know, maybe it was late. And I thought maybe it was a situation where he'd taken one too many timeouts and given free throws. This was almost as egregious. I couldn't, yeah. Wow, you'd feel terrible doing something like that. But yeah, like, okay, you get to draw up your play. And as I said, it was, yeah, post up for Joe Johnson. Like, they already know that. They know if they didn't get a score off that broken play, they were going to kick it out to Pujetta. They're going to reset it back up.
Just unbelievable.
And this is TBT. It looks more ridiculous in the TBT than it does in the NBA or the NBL or across Europe because this is a ragball league where if you don't have faith, you just roll out the balls. And it's a system tournament. You have read and react type plays, maybe a few quick hitters, and then you just go for it. You just let them play, and who's got the bigger balls wins. And that's what happened. And the other thing was no commentator criticism. There was no real criticism by the commentators. What did you think of that?
Yeah, it was shocking, wasn't it? You would expect them – I mean, they're ready to dish out on other people through the game and – that, mm-hmm. That's the job of a commentator to call out. Maybe they, I don't know. I think maybe they were stunned. It's just strange.
I think it comes down to this American love of the coach. Like you get Jim Boeheim on the telecast. True. Wow, he's rambling on and on, but we still got to give him 10 minutes because I mean it's Jim Boeheim. I don't. He tells really good players what, like, how to do, and they ignore him and go and show their athleticism. I've never understood it. So I think there was that element of like, oh, it's, you know, Skipper says, you know, the coaches, we got to do it. No, man. Sometimes you don't follow.
I mean, the other thing, yeah, I mentioned incompetence earlier, and did you mm-hmm. notice also that the same coach, Overseas Elite coach, lost
forgot about his timeout
track number, yeah. his timeouts, even to the point of maybe not understanding how they carry forward into the ELAM.
Yep.
He was determined.
Yes, he did.
One left. He had none left. He just just lost the plot. I don't know whether that's just a brain freeze. Maybe he was like, you know, you
panic.
Mistake and you realize in the moment that you've made that mistake. Like he probably realized, oh shit, I shouldn't have called that timeout. That's on me. And you
the panic.
And then you
the panic in his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you just pile on, you know, like one thing, mm-hmm. one error, you just stew in that. Leads to another thing. He's freaking out about how many timeouts he's left. He doesn't know what he's doing. He knows that Joe Johnson's probably going to give him a punch in the face after the game.
Joe, he stormed off. That was a storm off.
Yep.
Into the Shadows. It was terrible. I felt, well, not terrible, but it was what it was. But when they got footage of Joe Johnson walking off into the shadow, he just sort of disappeared into this billowy distance. Oh, that was something else. But and I feel bad for him because that looks, it's embarrassing if you're an NBA guy with that lot of credit. And Pujetta as well, these guys, when you don't come over a team like Sideline Cancer, 22 yep. ranked, not no real NBA talent other than Diamond Stone is gone. So yikes. And that was the end score. Did you have anything else?
Well, we haven't really. I need to give credit to the winning shot.
Oh, Mo Creek, yeah. This was a situation in Elam Ending Psychology where Sideline Cancer were going to take a three no matter what it presented like. Marcus Keane was desperate for it, and then yep. Mo Keane threw up one that was, it got out of the hands pretty quick, huh?
I was impressed that Keane resisted taking a couple of shots that he could have. You know, he had a little look at it, didn't like it, pulled it back out. That's good. You're not, really not working against a clock other than the shot clock. So take your time to find the right one. I don't think the one they shot was the right one, but
it's always right when it goes down.
Almost a one-handed shot. And
I know, a push shot type thing. Yeah. Just
nothing but net. Amazing.
Oh. And the scenes afterwards, oh my word. And I actually want to, I think that's the last note we have from this game, isn't it?
I've got one more little note.
Please.
I've always got one more. You challenged me last night, do I take the over on Keane? And you gave me 12. Keane finished with 22 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists.
There you go.
There we go.
Virtual shake of the hands.
That should be bragging,
Nicely done. I don't know what I said in reply to that. I hope I said over, but in the scheme of things. And this is what I want to talk about. We'll talk about this question before going into the next game, Red Scare and Golden Eagles.
Yeah.
Elam Ending. Do you replace, and I put out a tweet there saying the Elam Ending is the future of basketball. This game and this tournament thus far has shown me that, I'm willing to push my chips in and go all in with the Elam Ending to replace the way we do fourth quarters and overtime. What do you think? Am I biting off too much? Where do you sit on it?
No, I agree with you. I think it's so much fun. I did hear them in the commentary. It may have been the game we haven't yet talked about. They were suggesting using Elam.
Fran Fischler to replace overtime.
In place of overtime games.
I think good idea on the face of it. What do you think of it?
It's a bit weak. You might only get one or two of them an entire year.
Well, exactly. And this is exactly my thought. Like, it sounded sexy when I heard it. I was like, oh, yeah, replace overtime with it. Yeah, of course. But hang on. The thing is, once you get – the problem's not overtime. Once you get to overtime, you may as well have 2, 3, 4, 5. That's not the issue. There's nothing better than when overtime's part. The problem is NBA games, and I took NBA as the point of reference as the data point, they only go to overtime 6.2 – between 6.2 and 6.4%. So you've got another 93-something% that play out with the fouling and the
20 minutes for two just of game time. Yeah,
exactly. So while I heard that and thought, my initial impression was like, yeah, that's it. And then I was like, oh, hang on. No, that defeats the purpose of what the Elam Ending's exactly there to prevent. So as a good idea from Fran Fischler, no, I don't agree.
Especially in the NBA where they have so many timeouts, 20 second timeouts, full timeouts, TV timeouts,
And bad free throw shooters.
They take 20 seconds to put a free throw up anyway. You know, they take their breath and they bounce the ball 8 times. Jeez. It's like, calm.
With the idea of Elam Ending to replace the regular season, it comes down to two questions for me. First one being, and I'm asking you these, I'll get your answer. What's better, overtime or a buzzer beater?
Buzzer beater.
Of course buzzer beater. And a buzzer beater is not necessarily when it's against the clock. It's a walk-off home run. It's a walk-off shot, which is what the Elam Ending produces every single time. Second question I have for you is and this is one maybe you can answer, maybe you can't, but from a business perspective, what makes more money? Longer games, therefore more ads, which is what we currently have, or a better product? The Elam Ending makes a better product, but it would make games shorter. It would have less stoppages. It would have less advertisements. But at this point in time, do you feel like, if you've got a 2.5 hour product, but it's not as good, or would you rather just have a neat 2 hour product that works? That is a question that maybe we can't answer, but I think it's a valid one when you talk about replacing Elam Ending.
I think you want good games, and I think good games
I agree.
Through the gate.
People, good products.
People through the gates is what pays the bills. Yeah, the NBL in particular is not making enough money off ads, and particularly a few bonus ads at the end of a
precisely
long game.
NBA, bit iffy. NBL, it is a no-brainer
for me. Introduce this tomorrow. And someone said on Twitter, actually, Lockie Everett, good kid, good guy. He said, well, what about the history and things? Which is a fair comment. Like, you know, there's a history to things.
That's equalization and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just statically. And I totally get that. And just also, you know, we do things a certain way, and I get that. But my example would be the three-point lines come out, you know, 33 years into the NBA's 74-year history. Like, when it improves the game, history takes a backseat. This is the way it's always going to be. And this is the future. This is the shot clock of its time. This is Nick Elam. If I could shake his hand, I absolutely would. And, I mean, yeah, so I broke down those numbers. If overtime in the NBA happens 6% odd, you know, a percent of the time, there are 1,230 NBA games every season. That means 74 go to overtime. That's not bad. That's, you hear 74, you think that's a big total, but that means 1,156 don't. It's just not the rate of return. The clock is not giving you the rate of return on great finishes. And that's it. And I consider it like the NBA and the basketball now, it's trapped under a bus. Its leg is there. Listen, we can save the leg, but you'll have to be trapped under this bus forever. You know, we'll bring you soup. You'll live here at the roadside, you know, but you'll get to keep your leg. Or we can cut the leg off and you keep living. And I feel like that's the metaphor I'd use, as stupid as that sounds.
As a business, you should always be seeking to make your product better. And if you've got a clear, obvious way to do that, then take advantage of it. What's happened in the past has no matter. Like, it doesn't matter about the future. You know,
2 weeks into the Elam ending, once you get one great ending with the Elam ending, people have forgotten about it over time. Yep. They've forgotten about all of it. Yeah.
Like, what did shot clocks used to be? They started off, what was it, 35 seconds, and then went down to
35 seconds.
Then 30 seconds, then 24. Then a reset to 14. You know, rules can be tinkered with and people deal with it. And I think none of those changes have made the sport worse. So let's change another one.
And I mean, and here's the other thing as well. If someone was said in earnest and went to the NBA or another league and said, we're going to replace overtime with the Elam ending, that would be the equivalent of saying, okay, you've got this problem and I can fix it 6% of the time. And I want money. Thanks very much. It's less than GST. Get out. I've still got 93% of a problem. No, thank you. So no, I don't buy into that.
And novelty is key here, and being first to market.
First to market.
NBL can jump in on this before the NBA and can say, we were there first. TBT is a little sideline tournament. Okay, maybe Canada was doing it.
You get stats. You get a stat. You get Elam ending time, points in Elam ending. You get Elam ending winners. It adds a whole dynamic. I just think this is brilliant.
Imagine the social media feed. You know, you put it on Twitter. You put it on your Instagram. Like, look at what happened in this Elam. This is what the kids of today want. They want rapid excitement.
One question I have is, does Nick Elam have a patent on this? And that is why leagues are skeptical about bringing it in. Do they have to pay him a commission? I don't know. I'm going to get in touch with Nick Elam. I'm going to try anyway.
It's a good question.
Find that out. Because surely he's got a patent.
He would have. But who cares? I don't care.
Who cares?
Not going to be ridiculous.
Pay the man.
Not going to be exorbitant. He's a genius. Give him the money he deserves. Just like paying a profile player.
At the end of the day, we'll go back to the game. That was it. Sideline Cancer winning at number 22, ranked, beat number 2 overseas elite. They've won this thing four years in a row, not last year. And what was the end score? 67 to something. Do you have the end score?
In my excitement, I don't think I wrote it down. 67, I guess 65.
65, it was close. Yeah, they had the chance, of course, because that 2 would have won. So, 65 to 67. Yeah.
Do you think anybody has filled in a bracket correctly across all the people that might have done a fantasy bracket? Do you think anybody's got it right?
No one's got it right. I dare say no one's got these two in combination making the finals, let alone the winner. I think, I don't know who does the rankings. That's been talked about. I think COVID threw off these rankings, if I can sort of cut people some slack. You ready to jump on to the next?
Yes, let's do it.
That was a great game. Boy, that was such fun. And the way they celebrated that win, and there's some great moments from the non-Elam endings where guys hit shots and it's big. This was like, I can put up 10 from this tournament alone where the Elam ending winners are guys dogpiling. It's fantastic. Yep. Anyway,
running onto the court. I love it.
Brilliant. Let's go to Red Scare Golden Eagles.
Yep.
This was game actually played before it, but wasn't the Blue Ribbon event.
Actually, before I talk about that game, can I quickly ask you, what's more in your head? The Remington body and back hair groomer or the welcome back Cotter theme for the MLB?
This is the good thing about watching on delay. I do get to fast forward.
You skip them. Yeah, sure. I sometimes sit through them.
It's definitely the Remington back sack and crack job.
It's got this handle on it. I'm like, I, at this point, I'm like, could use that. And it's never been issued for me, but I'm indoctrinated to buy this book.
I have let myself go over this COVID time. You know, maybe a little bit of manscaping.
The Remington body and back hair groomer and the Welcome Back Carter theme. I was like, oh, I remember that show with Horshack and John Travolta.
Does anybody remember that? That is so ancient history. Why'd they go with that song? Most of the people,
the lyrics, really welcome back. Yeah, you know, they get it.
But they know.
Maybe it's a bigger show over there than it was here. But I remember it was Frank Kaplan. Addicted to Kamish. He was addicted to Knish, which is like deep fried potato or something like that.
Horseshack.
And he was the guy who, Horseshack and who was the Washington something? Can't remember.
Yeah.
And but Brian Kaepernick, he was the guy who did the Pepsi Challenge. He was that guy. Anyway, we're off topic. Weird. Red Scare, Golden Eagles. Like, take it wherever you want, Andrew. What do you think?
Red Scare team, no personality.
Team still, naught. Yep.
You still haven't sold me. I really
tried. Eighth ranked team. Fourth was Golden Eagles. Yeah, played out.
So I was looking at Red Scare. Who am I interested to watch? Well, nobody. But if I had to pick anybody, probably Oliver and Mikesell. Yeah.
Yep.
That'd be the two guys that I was thinking might put up a show. For Golden Eagles, I like Golden Eagles. There's something about them that I quite like.
Yeah, I do too. Man, they're tough. They play D. They attack the hoop, by far the strongest of any team in this tournament.
They've got one of my favorite players, I think, who turning into my favorite. Darius?
DJO. Darius Johnson Odom.
Yep.
Love that guy.
Love him too. Coming off the bench.
I know. That was a question I had for you. What on earth?
I think that's just showing off, isn't it? It's like, look at this stud. We don't even need to start him.
We'll talk about our best players of the tournament at the end of the next when this thing's over. But he's in it. And he's a guy, a bit quick departure. I can see him with the Adelaide 36ers. Giddy, tall, passing point guard. This guy, 6'2", you know, strong. Athletic attack of the basket. Super strongest guy in the tournament by far. And then, you know, those other players around them, I forget who else Adelaide have got, but he'd be the team where I'm like, he is the guy. Played in Europe. He's 31. He's not a young guy. It's not like you got to train him up. He knows. I think this guy's fantastic.
That'd be a good get. And he wants to come down under. He wants to be.
He replied to us personally. He said, yeah, we'll have it.
So get the contract. So look, cool. This game, looking at it was – pretty ugly, pretty slow to start with. And I wrote down the question.
Plodding is the word I've got. Plodding.
I wrote defense wins championships, ? We always talk about that, don't we? It's like, you can put up all the three-point shots you like, blah, blah, blah. It's going to get you so far. It's going to get you into the finals, but then you've got to play some D. It felt like this a little bit, like they suddenly realized, let's lock down. And defense became the order of the day. Having said that, Golden Eagles, they were running a bit of motion, almost motion offense. I don't know, maybe that's
a shuffle. They were shuffling. They were doing these little Harlem Globetrottery handoffs at the 3-point line, undefended. Yeah, that made me laugh.
Very Globetrotter. That's
like,
hilarious.
And then, like, no one's gotten it. It's like, just one of you could just hold the ball. No need.
One of them DJO just starts breakdancing while maintaining his dribble.
Runs into the crowd with a bucket of water. What do you think?
Look, and when you've got for Red Scare, if you've got Mikesell and McMahon on the court at the same time, pace that, because they are dangerous from 3-point line.
I did quite like them, but I
don't think they used them enough, to be perfectly honest.
Agreed.
It was that was it for the first quarter, really. 16-15 to Red Scare at the end.
It happened again this quarter, like the first. Like, it happened going into the second. DJO, two hard attacks on the cup for 4 points, absolutely ramrodded guys out of the way. That translates in any league. Boy, he would get some calls in the NBL. He would go to the line 8 to 15 times a game in the NBL. He just gets contact and finishes through it. He is terrific, but we've already mentioned that. Yep. Big quarter court shot to end the quarter, 34-38.
Yep.
Acker, little Mo Acker. I remember him. I think he had an NBA cup of coffee. GE Field Cage just got off what got written here. For the game, they only had 11 points off turnovers. And I just felt like when they got a rebound, when they conceded possession, they held it. They didn't, there was no running, there was no freedom. Again, we see that coaching fingerprint come into these games. And yeah. I didn't like it so much.
Mm.
Anything else from the second, or happy to jump on to the third?
I noticed what my favorite play from the second quarter was
the alley-oop to start the quarter.
I think it was Acker, and it was the other. It was the two miniature point guards anyway. One of them was 5'8", and the other one was
Bikes and Acker.
Yeah, yeah, and it was hilarious because they took it down in the low block, and it was basically it was one on one as they sort of one guy posted the other guy up to put it in for the basket.
Right,
and all it looked like to me was like you know Mario Kart when you get hit by the thing, and all the players, all the competitors shrink down into their miniature.
Oh yeah, lightning.
It was exactly like that. It was just like, whoa, these guys are tiny.
I do remember that.
It was so funny. There's two tiny little guys putting a post-up clinic on. It was cracked me up, made me laugh. And then I've got
that was it. Yeah, I've what got else? One
question for you, thinking about NBL applications. Jameel Wilson.
Oh, wow. Okay. NBA. I can.
Big body.
I've got him, Jameel Wilson. I've got three ticks next to him. I mean, NBA or NBL. I mean, he can hit the three. I don't know how many he hit, but it seemed a lot. I mean, I've got him here 23 points, 61%, 5 threes. Actually, I do have it written down. That's how many he hit.
And looks smooth.
Big body. Oh, looks smooth. They weren't just flukes going up at the rim. This guy can play. He was terrific. He was the best player in this game by a long way. Yeah, definitely a guy worth looking at. I didn't research where he's playing and whether he's under contract or not, but he has got an asterisk next to me, next to his name, and I will.
Yeah, he'd be a great one.
I thought Golden Eagles, if we can jump to the third, I thought they started playing with a little more freedom in the third. Red Scare made a push, and the scores remained tight, but I felt like that was when Bikes made the steal. He pulled the chair on the guy, and then they had the no dribble three from Acker. That took scores to 39-46. They put a 7-point lead on. I felt from there that that's when they realized, all right, this is what we're going to do to beat this team. Red Scare made a push, but I never felt it was genuine. Am I seeing it the right way? Or what do you think?
I had the same thing. It feels like Golden Eagles have their measure at this point.
Yeah. And it's not like they just put on the studs and went and put on the skates and just went. It wasn't like that. They got ahead. Came back, but the whole time I was like, nah, Golden Eagles know exactly how to defend this team and how to score on them. It's over. And I knew it from there, even though at the end of the third, it was 57-61 in favor of Golden Eagles, but only plus four.
Yeah. We had our first real signing of Travis Diener.
Apparently
famous from Marquette. He's held in high regard.
I was talking about him before. He had the body on him. He had the 38-year-old body.
He had the dad bod rocking, didn't he? Mm-hmm. I thought he actually got a bit too much court time than he probably deserved. I agree.
And had to commit a foul to get out of the game. Yeah. Bless his heart.
There must be so much love for that guy that we're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Almost mm-hmm. Like I think so.
He had to be on the court.
Going into the fourth, what do you think? I've just got here Mike Sell disappeared in this game, popping up occasionally to commit some turnovers in the fourth, but a few cameos, but really very little from a guy we were hoping to see more of.
Yeah, well, I didn't write anything down between the third quarter break and the Elam ending. Right. All I wrote was the scores. And so it went from Golden Eagles scored 10 points and Red Scare scored 7.
And the only thing I've got written down, Jameel Wilson with three ticks next to it. Yep. I've got 6-minute mark. Things got testy. A lot of talk between Jameel Wilson and others. And then, 64-71 going into the Elam ending. Target 79. And I've got here Jameel Wilson hit the big three late in the shot clock to go plus 7 and take it into that Elam. That was the shot that it wasn't the dagger. It wasn't the one that won the Elam, but it was the one that just set it up for the win. You really knew it by that point.
Yeah. And then Wilson did hit the ending three.
He did hit the ending, but then in the Elam, first play, DJO, as you knew he would, 2+1 to start the Elam. Stops the clock, gets his score, real brilliant player. I don't know who's going to cover him for Overseas Elite. One guy I want to talk about who was good for Red Scare, Trey Landers.
Yeah.
21.6. What did you think?
I liked him. I liked him in their previous game as well. He's sort of active on the offensive boards, got a few dunk putbacks and things like that.
Sort of a Jay Sean Tate clone, don't you think?
That's a good, that's a really good comparison. Sort of just seems to do enough to to warrant his inclusion on the team. Doesn't seem to demand the ball. Just a guy that seems fits in, knows his role and plays it well.
Yeah, and runs hard and runs the lane and runs from hoop to hoop, bringing a defender with him and creating lanes. I really liked him. And what I liked is this, I like to look at stats that are a bit different. Fouls drawn. And DJO, Darius Johnson Odom, he's been high in this category all tournament. He draws anywhere between sort of 4 and 6 fouls. He had 4 in this game. He always has 4. He always gets the line. But Trey Landers had 5, and that was a game leader. Like, he just banged bodies. He attacked hard. And when you do that, you create stuff for yourself. You create fouls, but you create 3-point shots.
Mm.
And I thought he was terrific at that. And in the same way that Tate is for the Sydney Kings.
And you'd have to say Landers are probably about 6'4", be about the same. Yeah. Maybe even a bit
same strong. Physique too, like real broad shoulders that just barrel down, no tapering in at the waist. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm a fan. But anything from the Elam?
No, other than Wilson hitting a 3 to finish it and just cemented him as a really quality player.
Yeah. No, agreed.
The best thing about this game was finally Red Scare gone. Get them. Get them home.
Yeah. Go away. Boring team. I'm sure they're lovely, but didn't enjoy watching them play at any time in the tournament. Don't wish them harm, but and also, yeah, just a relief, a high-ranked, good team in Golden Eagles has gone through.
Yep.
Especially when I saw this game first and thought, okay, Overseas Elite, you're going to win their game. That was my assumption. So I thought, okay, that's going to be a good final if those two go through. I'm still excited about this final. Let's quickly talk about it.
Sure.
Golden Eagles, Sideline Cancer. Firstly, who do you think is going to win? And then what are you looking for?
All right. Well, I think I've got to say Golden Eagles are going to get the win. But Sideline Cancer, I mean, they've had so many upsets. What's another one, right? So
I'm happy to take Sideline Cancer. If you're taking Golden Eagles, I'm going to take Sideline Cancer.
All right. All right. I love the matchups. It's going to be fun. You've got Jameel Wilson from Golden Eagles we just talked about. But he's going to go up against Eric Thompson. That's going to be a fantastic matchup.
Oh, and then do you think DJO is going to play on Marcus Keane?
I think there might be a cross matchup, perhaps, where you have
bit of bikes, bit of
bikes. Yeah, probably. DJO, I would expect to play defense on Keane, but you might see Keane matching up on bikes down the other. I think maybe they'll want to protect Keane. And DJO obviously attack the basket, try and draw fouls on him. They can't have Keane in foul trouble.
You need it, you need him out there. And I kind of like the wings for Sideline Cancer more. Like, I like Rebby Abel more. I like the Mo Creek more than guys I can't even really name on Golden Eagles, especially.
Yeah. Yep.
Golden Eagles are pretty top heavy, where it's Bikes, DJO, and Wilson, Williams. Yep. Pardon me, they're the guys I like. Was it Williams? No, it's Wilson.
Wilson.
I like those guys better than I do. Whereas you go to Sideline Cancer, I like the wings they have that run there. I think they're an exciting bunch. So it's gonna be a lot closer than you think. The ratings, throw them out the door. I think the Sideline Cancer team. This should be ranked in the top 10. This is a mistake. And I think it's going to be a really good final. Are you upset that Overseas Elite, or a little deflated that Overseas Elite aren't in this final? Would that have been a better matchup with Golden Eagles?
I'm not deflated at all. I like Sideline Cancer. They're fun to watch. I like them. I didn't feel any great attachment to Overseas Elite.
And they earned it. They earned that win. They it's not like they got hot and hit a bunch of threes. That was a game that was in the dirt and they picked it up.
Yep. So I think good on them. I think it's a great matchup, and I think it's a true matchup where you could potentially see either side winning, and you can make an argument for either team.
And I'm going to say Keane. Well, I want to ask you this: over under on Marcus Keane in the final 15 points. I'm going 15 this time.
15, you said. Under.
I think he's going to go over. I think he's going to shoot quite well as well. I think Sideline Cancer are going to do it. I like Thompson. I like Keane, and I like their runners in between. I think if the coaches can get out of each other's way. Plus, I felt Golden Eagles are a little bit more restrictive. Like, they've got to get out and run. And Darius Johnson Odom coming off the bench. Has he ruffled feathers? Like, that is their guy. He has to be on the court for 30 minutes plus. And play through him and put him in isolations. I think they overthink their game a little bit too much. I don't think they're looking at their personnel. And whereas Sideline Cancer are like, Marcus Keane, spread it, give him pick and roll. We're going to get out and run through Creek and Bo Jackson's cousin, and we're going to go for it. Yep. So
that's my case for Sideline Cancer. Am I confident of it? No, I think it's a really even matchup. Are you the same way?
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, what a shame that Diamond Stone won't be playing, because they would really have strength inside at that point. They'd have Eric Thompson, shown so much. Diamond Stone up against the Golden Eagles. They've really got Luke Fisher, the big white center. Missed a couple of bunnies in this game. Didn't really do a lot. It's that I'm looking at their roster and just thinking, who's their other big guy? It's a really interesting. I mean,
my worry is the fatigue, but with the day's break, I mean, Sideline Cancer's main five have seen huge minutes. Keane's played every minute the last two games, I believe.
Yep.
But with the day's break and their age and where they're at, I don't see that as an issue. But it could be an issue, but I'm not going to
discount that as even a factor.
Fair enough. The day's break. Come on, civilizations have risen and fallen within the course of a day, so guys can come back.
And can
anything else to add? Oh yeah,
CBT, cease all testing. There is no point now. No point. Yeah. What's to be gained from it?
Well, there is one positive test. I'd like to think we've both tested positive to TBT fever. This is fantastic. This tournament, like, I came into this thinking, oh yeah, we'll cover it a bit and keep a touch on the NBL guys. There are no NBL guys in the finals. There were no NBL guys in these two games, four teams.
Yep.
Don't care.
No.
This thing is fantastic. There should be one of these in every non-season. Imagine if Australia did its own thing. That's a bit of, you know, NBL one guys and this and that.
Yep.
If you package it right,
yep.
It can be fantastic. Australia
could do a smaller version of it. Just have a round of 16 or something like that. Don't bother with anything else. Do it in a week.
Do it right, and be a lot of fun. And we sort of mocked them in the beginning, but I applaud them now is the TBT has been able to latch into or dig into the love for these college teams, and they've aligned that way. Now I see the merit in that, in having teams that represent a college. What the Australian equivalent is, I'm not quite sure. Is it the rec league basketball teams? Probably not. I don't think it's got to be something else, whether it's regional, a state of origin type play. I'm not too sure.
I think you're right. State of origin, it works for the footy, right? It's been talked about in basketball in the past.
I'd watch.
The only problem is you've got imbalance. You've got Victoria with so many more players than
maybe you'd have to split. But then if you split up Victoria, like I think you're right. There would be an imbalance of talent, but at the same time, look at this tournament. Upsets happen, and it's a better product if you let Victoria have a stacked team and try and knock them off.
Yeah, yeah. They can be the big bad guys that everybody else.
Everyone loves a villain.
Yep.
And that's it. Andrew, I think we're done. Great episode, great games. We take a day's break and then we're coming back, not tomorrow, but the day after. I don't actually know when the game is on.
I think it's a little bit later. I think it might be.
Late. Good. I'll be all active on Twitter as well, Andrew, at Andrew Canyon, at NBL Pocket Pod. Any last words?
I'm going to miss you tomorrow. I've gotten
the
rhythm of doing this every day. I don't know what I'll probably just talk to myself for an hour.
We may do an emergency podcast. If something comes up in the NBL, because no, it won't. Actually, Wednesday's going to be a big show because that's when the first day of free agency and apparently a lot of stuff's going to be announced. So, Andrew, keep your pencil sharp and your pens in ink. It'll be a fun day. Thank you for listening, everybody. Once more, follow me and Andrew on Twitter. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And if you're in the business of buying a book, use booktopia.com via the link in the description. Thanks very much, and I will see you next time.